Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to The Economist Asks. I'm Anne McElvoy. And this week we're asking, can President Biden revive bipartisanship in America? In some ways, Joe Biden's inauguration ran to the same script as most previous ones. He took the oath of office on the steps of the Capitol and made his way to the White House. But this new beginning in American politics was taking place just 2 weeks after supporters of President Trump stormed the Senate. As a result, security has been especially tight. A relatively small number of people were invited to greet the new presidency, and they sat on socially distanced chairs, all wearing face coverings. Well, one of those invited to greet the new dawn of Joe Biden in the White House was Cindy McCain. As the widow of Republican Senator John McCain, she was one of the best-known Republicans endorsing Joe Biden before the election. Cindy McCain was introduced to her late husband by Jill Biden, the new First Lady. Today, she's a member of the Biden-Harris Transition Advisory Council, a group that helped plan the transfer of power from a Trump administration reluctant to leave office to the Biden one. Cindy McCain, welcome to The Economist Asks.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
You were one of the lucky few there at President Joe Biden's inauguration. What was the standout moment for you?
Well, you know, really two moments. Number one, of course, the inauguration of Joe Biden, the absolute meaning of what it was all about. It actually brought tears to my eyes because I view this as a new beginning, a new time for the United States of America, and certainly something that's going to now be an inclusive government and one that believes in its people, and not a government that's for its own personal profit or own personal gain. So for me, it stood for many things. And of course, the second one was the inauguration of our first female in the vice president's seat, obviously. I mean, Kamala Harris will make an amazing vice president. And of course, that's also a new beginning for the United States, having a female in that position. Finally.
Finally, yeah, took a while. What was the atmosphere like? Some of the shots that we were seeing here, obviously they were somewhat limited in terms of what the sense that you could get in terms of camera angles, but Bernie Sanders and his mittens, were you nearby?
I was below where Bernie was seated, but the group where I was at were all the bunch of former senators, and some of the Joint Chiefs were behind us and stuff. And it was, although we were socially spaced, it was very joyous. It was, everyone was taking selfies and renewing old friendships, and also, so glad to be there again in this new beginning. When he was inaugurated, I was sitting behind one of my very best friends, Senator Heidi Heitkamp, and Heidi turned around, and I stepped forward to her out of my chair, and we both hugged like crazy right as he finished. So it's something that it was a party atmosphere. It was something that made all of us, reminded all of us about what is great about America. 2 weeks ago, our Capitol was under siege. And two weeks later, here we are, a peaceful transfer of power and a new beginning for the United States.
President Biden made that inauguration speech standing on the same soil as the riots 2 weeks ago that you referenced. That was the 6th of January. Written now into the history of the Senate and American politics.
Yes.
You still sound moved by that.
Yes, because I mean, I was out in Arizona, and like everyone else, I was glued to the television set. I could not believe what was happening. And I could not believe not only what was happening, but the disrespect towards the bodies, and meaning the bodies of the Senate and the House, and the disrespect for the actual chambers themselves. I mean, I looked down with and watched with tears in my eyes people mistreating the desks and the items that were in the desk, and talking about the members of the Senate like somehow they were comedic players. This is not comedy, and what they did was illegal, and it was wrong, and it was instigated by the former president. And so, as you can see, democracy works. Democracy worked for us. Yes, democracy can be flawed, but in our case, it worked. We are going to work together as a government in a bipartisan fashion, because that's what Joe Biden believes in and works for.
And that's our overall question today of how possible that will be. Now, of your fellow Republicans, you're still a member of the Republican Party, yes?
I am.
Well, by a margin, a small margin, but still a margin, 45% to 43% of them respectively said that they supported the actions of those pro-Trump extremists. This was from a YouGov survey reported in The Economist, so a reliable source. What does it tell you?
Well, I think it tells me that a lot of that our party as a whole has lost its way. We were the party. I'm old enough to have been a member of the party when Ronald Reagan was president. And we, at that particular point in time, we were the party of inclusion. We were the party of new beginnings. We were the party of working together. And we've lost our way. Not only have we lost our way, but we have lost what we really stand for and what we believed in for many, many years. But that has a great deal to do with the actions at the top. So I believe now that there's many, many people now that want to see a different kind of Republican Party. And I believe this party may split. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but I know that we can't move forward in the fashion that that these people behaved in on January 6th.
And so just to be clear, you think that is a credible option, that the Republican Party, the GOP, could split into two, effectively a Trump wing and a beyond Trump wing?
Personally, yes, I do. It was an abomination. We're abhorrent in what we saw. But more importantly, that's not who we are. Something's going to give within our Republican Party to hopefully bring it back to where we were in the center and the party of new beliefs and new beginnings.
And are you seeing the kind of leadership material out there that you would be interested in to lead such a post-Trump Republican Party?
I hope so. I mean, at this particular point today in my time, I don't see it, but I'm also a big believer in what is right about America. And there's always good people bubble up to the top and take hold of the mantle and make sure that they lead us into the future.
I'm not sure you have absolute predictive power, but what would the kind of individual be like? You throw a few names out there. It's only a few of us listening.
Oh, I don't have any names. I just know that there's some good young people within our party that are strong believers in what we should stand for, and more importantly, disagree completely with what happened on January 6th. And it's time that we have our voice as well.
So that day might actually be the launch pad for a new GOP.
Right. I know they're out there, and I know there's some great new people.
I spoke to your late husband in April 2017. Mm. Senator McCain gave, yes, indeed. I mean, I look back on it very fondly and, of course, with great sadness, like many people who knew him and loved a good old political tussle. Because he was up for that, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yes, he was. He loved a good political tussle.
Yes, you'd think you'd got on his wrong side and his team would go, no, it's fine. He's always
no,
like
that. John McCain was a person who he believed what he believed and he lived what he believed, and he would fight like cats and dogs with the opposition on the floor of the Senate, but it was never personal. They would walk off the floor, grasp arms, have dinner together, grab a drink together, whatever it may be. That's what true leadership is about. It's not personal. And so that's the difference in the John McCain's and the Ted Kennedy's of the world as opposed to what some of the people that we have right now that are in the Senate and the House.
And one of the things that he said to us, we were talking between key votes in the Senate. He said to me this: partisanship is at an all-time high. And he conceded, obviously, Americans are not very happy with business as it's conducted here in our nation's capital. Now, doesn't that encapsulate the challenge here also for President Biden? 4 decades in public office, he's a man of the system, he understands the system, that's also how bipartisanship works, but he does now lead a country whose basic beliefs seem to be that the system is broken and hasn't been working for them.
And I believe that. I believe because the partisanship is and was certainly at an all-time high, as my husband said, we also now have a president that is willing to step across the aisle, work together, talk it out, figure out what's best for the country, not what's best for the party, and move forward. And Joe Biden's the perfect person for this because all of us have seen him in action. We know what he can do. We know what he's capable of. He's already called a meeting of the leadership of both parties to come to the White House and begin talking about these issues, things that face the country. I mean, we're like our folks in the UK, we're swamped with coronavirus. We have to get this under control and make sure that we have a plan. And I know that that's his first and foremost item that he needs to get to. But he is willing to and needs to and is going to bring the leadership together so that we can work together for the good of the country.
Obviously, coronavirus and those stronger anti-COVID messages and steps have been very clearly laid out. It was pretty busy first day for the new president, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He signed
it was.
that executive
really
order's
was.
Pen
was amazing.
Must have been running out of ink. Please remind him he's going to need to keep that ink well drawn up. But one of those that really gave me some pause for thought, I suppose, was immigration. He's preserved protections for Dreamers, so-called, in an Obama-era policy there, reversed the Muslim ban, he revoked the order that directed harsh and extreme immigration enforcement measures, and crucially, stopped the border wall construction, so we may never really see that promised wall. My question is whether it was wise to make immigration-related executive orders, which are a divisive issue, so strongly part of his first push as a presidency, and could it consolidate anti-immigration Trump-based support?
Well, first of all, he did what he said he was going to do when he was campaigning for president, and of course in the transition period, these were all items that he talked about and said that he was going to tackle within his first moments in office. As far as the immigration issue goes, those of us that live in the Southwest, that live on the border, are very familiar with what took place and what is taking place now. And we have to not only get a handle on what's going on, but there's the human value in all of this, the separation of the families, the refugee camps that are now stationed at the southern border, people being held without proper medical care, proper food, et cetera, and they can't go back. And now you also hear about the movements of people back towards the border again. We have to have an immigration process that works. We are we're the country of immigrants. That's what built our nation. And with no immigration doesn't make any sense. There has to be a good plan in place, a way to handle it, a way to hear each case as it comes in, and more importantly, keep our families together. Those of us who are just, I'm still in disbelief that that took place and that we can't find some of these families. We can't find the children and the parents. So there's so much at stake right now, and the human value has taken a huge toll within what occurred in the previous administration.
Well, that is, I think, beyond question. It's what follows from it and what is the politically most prudent and effective course, isn't it? So do you think that President Biden and Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Party leader in the Senate, should be pushing a path to citizenship for undocumented migrants?
Yes, and my husband believed in that as well. There has to be a path to citizenship. There has to be a way that we can process people that are here illegally, and more importantly, process their value. Many of these people were fleeing harm and war and the destruction that's going on in their own country. So they're here because they're afraid. No one willingly leaves their country unless they're desperate. And that's, in so many cases, that's exactly what occurred. As you mentioned, the border wall, it was always rather curious to me with regard to the border wall that we could even build it. There are portions of Arizona that would be absolutely impossible to build a wall on the southern border. It's just too rugged and too mountainous and all the things that we talked about. So I'm grateful that the border wall has been halted. And that we can figure out other ways to help not just process the border, but make sure that these people themselves that do make it across are at least processed in an orderly manner.
But is it not the case that some things can be done by executive fiat? And as you say, changing that regime at the border is one of those things which would be merciful. But it is more difficult to come up with a kind of balance of legislation. What we call immigration in the American context tends to mean those who've already got to the United States and what their status should be. Can you really see Joe Biden risking a big push for that in Congress? And some people might say it risks creating big backlash and that he might well not succeed.
Well, I do know that he will talk to people on the other side of the aisle. I mean, there has to be compromise in this. From both parties. There has to be some way to compromise and figure out the best method to process and handle the people that are already here. There must be a path to citizenship, as my husband said many, many times before. These are human beings. I'm personally am very grateful that he handled the DACA issue within an executive order. They're children that came across with their parents. So we all know the story behind it. But immigration is a tough issue. It's a very divisive issue in our country. It's not something that the previous administration generated because it was already happening here. But what the previous administration did was gin it up in the wrong direction. They made it a political issue when it's a human issue. And that therein lies the difference. I deal in the human trafficking arena, and the trafficking that's going on and has gone on in the past is abhorrent with what's happened, especially to our women and children. So with the Biden administration, I think there's going to be great detail with regards to that issue as well, and I'm grateful for that.
And I know how much commitment you put into that issue. I think we first met at an event in London when you were on your roadshow to international capitals. I shouldn't make light of it, but I got the feeling that this is something that still motivates you very much.
It's something that the Institute, the McCain Institute, deals with in a manner. We have a prosecutors consortium and things. We're working on making sure that we process and handle the traffickers. They need to be jailed, et cetera. I know that's a whole other issue, but I'm very proud of what the McCain Institute is doing, especially on this particular issue. I really am.
You've talked about bipartisanship, about reaching across the aisle. You've remembered your late husband in that context, and you look forward perhaps to being able to invent it. But what does that mean then with the way that Donald Trump personally and his family are to be handled after his time in office? And could the impeachment push, an imminent impeachment trial, even curb plans to focus on that creation of unity?
Well, I do know that they're looking at processing the impeachment issue very quickly. Everything I've heard, of course, on the news and I've read, that will be seen. I think that we need to rely on our senators and our congressmen for this, those who were part of the actual insurrection that occurred and was generated by this past administration is something that this can never happen again. And so as the impeachment moves forward, I think, the Congress will make that decision as to how we'll handle not only the former president, but his family.
What's your own instinct on the balance then between justice, but also a sense of reckoning and for some even revenge taking on Donald Trump and his family. And how far, you know, could that get out of control from the perspective of a new Democrat in the White House?
Well, there's checks and balances in the Congress, and I believe in the checks and balances that we hold both in the Senate and the House. Certainly, there is going to be an impeachment. He was impeached in the House, and now whether or not he's convicted on the Senate side, there are reasons. This should never be about emotions or some kind of beef you have with that particular person, but it's about the actions that were taken and the results of those actions. And we all saw what happened with that. So I believe in what the Senate's going to do and however the process is taken. I know enough people in there are discouraged with what occurred that this is something that they believe they need to do. And as an American, I do too.
And do you feel that there's a sense of perhaps of focusing on Donald Trump? What would you do? And the impeachment is very separate, but there's a whole threatened raft. We've been writing about it this week of possible legal consequences for Donald Trump, but also for his family. And I wondered if you felt easy about that as someone who knows how families, obviously the Trump family is part of his politics and part of his business, but how carefully should you tread there?
Well, as far as his family goes, they were not elected. And that particular issue and the issues that maybe the government has with them will certainly be processed through our court system, as it should be. I don't know. I'm not one that knows. I'm not an insider with any of that. I mean, what I know and what I saw is what occurred on January 6th. And for senators to be held, or congressmen to be held in a secret room in a place to be safe, and people barricaded in offices, it was abominable. So there are reasons for why the Senate's going to take the actions that they do, and I believe in that. I believe in the process and the system, as did my husband. And we will see what occurs.
And how do you feel about your own Arizona GOP criticizing you? I think they're proposing to censure you for your support of Joe Biden. It seems to cause some mirth.
I find it comical. I really do. In fact, we've talked about having T-shirts made. So, listen, I'm a Republican. I did what I thought was the right thing for my country. I'm very proud of what I did. And I have absolutely, I look back and I know I did the right thing. As far as the Arizona GOP, they'll do what they do, and my life will go on.
And you'll have the T-shirt. You might tell us what slogan's going to be on it.
I will. Americans are great with T-shirts. So,
but isn't that, you could say that's a very small part of the picture. It's important, obviously, in your home state. But it is a party racked by infighting. And yet you said you won't leave the Republican Party, if I'm still reading you correctly. But when you saw that violence in the Senate, when you saw members of your party rioting in the heart of the Capitol and of American democracy, and those images going around the world, did the thought cross your mind, I need to get out of this party?
Never. It's never crossed my mind. Have I been frustrated? Yes. Sure, have I had moments where I thought, I can't believe what I'm seeing, what the heck is going on? Who are these people? You know, they're not my Republicans, which makes it even more important that those of us who are law-abiding citizens and do not believe in the kind of chaos that took place, make sure that our party finds its way again and finds the center of where we belong, and I believe there's enough people out there that are going to do just that.
You're sticking with it.
I am. I am.
And what do you think? I mean, you raised a very interesting thought that the party, a disruptive thought, but possibly a necessary one, that the party will split. Do you think we will have an option of another President Trump, if not himself, then maybe one of his children?
Well, I don't know. As far as, it depends certainly on what the Senate does with the impeachment process as to whether or not he will have the ability to run again. You know, it's 4 years is a long time politically. And a lot can happen in those 4 years. So it's one thing to say it now, and it's one thing to do it 4 years from now.
That's what, it's just, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's the half-life of a politician is it's very short. So we need to give this time and watch the Senate process and work our way through this and get back to work also.
And speaking of back to work, the Times of London reported you as a front runner to become ambassador to this great nation on the side of the Atlantic. I'm speaking to you from London today. I've also met you here a couple of times, which makes me think you don't mind being here despite the weather. Is this a runner?
You know something, I will serve. If President Biden should ask me to serve in any capacity, I would be honored and grateful to do so. We'll see. I've had nothing said to me, and I just look forward to being a part of this new beginning and a part in any way I can and be helpful. I did not do this. I did not endorse Joe Biden for anything other than I wanted a better government and I wanted a new beginning for our country. That's why I did this. I did it for my country.
And theoretically doing it from London wouldn't be too shabby.
We'll see what happens.
Maybe I've quite got you to commit on that one, but you're not ruling it out, it seems, to my semi-trained ear. You wrote a piece for us last October, by invitation piece in our series, and you said our institutions are strong. Is America looking strong now after everything we've seen in that very fraught and contested election? And we really cannot leave aside that many, many people, a very large number of Americans, did not want to let go of Donald Trump or what he stood for.
Now we have, as we all saw yesterday, a new president. And I think we're going to see the world, as you saw, there was an outpouring from the world yesterday, from the world community, because they want the United States of America to stay strong and be the beacon of hope that we've always been. And so it's, in my opinion, I think that with President Biden, we're going to see just that. A world that is hopefully better, and hopefully a United States that stands up to the thugs in the world and not kowtow to them, and most importantly be the nation of hope and honor that we've always been. I believe in that. I believe Joe Biden can reconstitute that for us and also help us remind the world that, you know, even though our democracy is flawed, it's still the best we've got, and we're as strong as ever.
Very, very brief last thought. It's a demanding job. Nobody knows that better than you, alongside your husband, through some of the rather grueling moments of the last elections that have been held in America. Joe Biden's not a spring chicken. Has he got the energy for it?
Oh, absolutely. Does he have the energy? He reminds me of my husband. I mean, if John were still alive today, he'd be outrunning the reporters that were chasing him for a comment, as you have done. Joe Biden absolutely has the energy and the thought and the willingness and the creativity to do the great things that we need to have done. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. They are a wonderful family. As you know, we shared a few things in common, and that we're having two sons in combat at the same time while we were both running for president. We've shared a great deal. Obviously, the loss for both families have suffered. So I find my compassionate, caring, character-driven president as someone that will be a remarkable leader for all of us.
Cindy McCain, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
And we'd love to know what you think. Can Joe Biden reinvigorate partisanship in a divided America? And should the Republican Party now consider splitting, as Cindy McCain suggests? Your thoughts on that inauguration after the turmoil at the Senate, very welcome. We do read all of your notes to us. We learn rather a lot from them. So write to us, radio@economist.com, or you can tweet us at Economist Radio as always. For more on American politics in depth, make sure you listen to our Checks and Balance podcast on your podcast app. And there's a special offer for listeners on a subscription. Go to economist.com/podcast offer. The link is in the show notes. I'm Anne McElvoy, and in London, this is The Economist.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way.
Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.